One of the brightest stars in the sky is behaving strangely, pulsating from bright to dim twice as quickly as usual. At the moment, Betelgeuse is very bright in the night. What's going on? If anyone knows, it'll be Alan Gilmore. Alan's one of our most distinguished astronomers. He once ran the Mount John Observatory and is still involved with the NEAR asteroid program at Mount John with his wife Pam. They're in charge of that. Alan and Pam have made a number of space discoveries too, including minor planets and a comet. Alan even has an asteroid named in his honour, the Eunomia asteroid 2537, and was on a New Zealand post stamp. Kia ora, Alan.
Kia ora, Susanna.
First things first, where is Betelgeuse?
At this time of year, it's low in the western evening sky. So if you know the pattern of the saucepan or the pot, which in classical terms is Orion's belt and sword, the three bright stars in a line and the little line that makes the bottom of the saucepan and the little line of stars that makes the handle of the saucepan. If you find those, they're straight west, quite low in the sky when the sky's darkening. And then off to the right of them is a bright orange star, and that's Betelgeuse, or Betelgeuse, some people call it. Yeah. So it's in our evening sky now. It's disappearing because it's sinking lower and lower each evening, and it will turn up in the morning sky in later half of June.
So the best time, and let's go over the name, Betelgeuse, Betelgeuse. What's the way to go here?
It depends who you ask. You really probably need an Arabic scholar to it's an Arabic name originally, but it has been severely mangled in various translations. I always say Betelgeuse because I think that's probably more like the Arabic pronunciation, but Betelgeuse has become a sort of standard thing, I think popularized by I can't remember a song, or maybe it was a TV series or something like that.
Well, I'm going to adjust now and refer to Betelgeuse. So, the best time to have a look is in the early evening for Betelgeuse.
Correct.
And I understand this is new territory for this star, and only a few years ago, weren't you on RNZ National telling us why Betelgeuse had grown so dim?
Quite possibly. It was quite a noticeable fading of the star, and it did cause a lot of interest among astronomers and even casual sky watchers, really. I mentioned that Betelgeuse is to the right of the pot, and to the left of the pot is another bright star called Rigel. And Rigel is a blue-white sort of star, and the two stars are usually fairly comparable in brightness, but Betelgeuse became quite a lot fainter than normal. And there was some speculation, quite a lot of speculation about what was going on. That was at the beginning, at the end of 2019, beginning of 2020. And what we think happened, well, it's pretty well established actually, is that it's a pulsating star. Big red giant stars like Betelgeuse, they pulsate. Some pulsate a lot more than others. And as they pulsate, they change their brightness. In the case of Betelgeuse, we think it threw off a cloud of gas in our direction, and the gas condensed into soot, or the carbon in the gas condensed into soot. It's not all carbon, but there's quite a lot of carbon in that gas. And so the star basically disappeared behind a veil of soot, and then gradually as that dispersed, it brightened up again. We know that the star didn't basically change in itself, because we can measure infrared radiation that penetrates the soot and isn't dimmed by the soot. And there was no change in the infrared radiation coming from the star. So it wasn't as though the star faded, but something got between us and the star that caused it to fade.
So how much brighter has Betelgeuse become?
About 50% brighter than normal. Now, 50% sounds a lot, but it's only quite a small change in brightness. The eye doesn't actually pick up a change in brightness unless it's about 30%. So it's not a very obvious change in brightness, but it is, as far as we know, well, according to the information I've seen, it's unprecedented in its increase in brightness. But I think if you're just casually looking at the sky and you know the constellation of Orion, it might not be particularly obvious to a casual observer.
To give us some perspective, if we placed Betelgeuse in our solar system instead of the sun that we have, there'd be no planet Earth. Is that right?
That's quite correct. Yes, it's about 700 times wider than the sun. So if you put it in the middle of the solar system, it would extend out to about the asteroid belt. So that means Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, and some of the asteroids would actually be inside the star. So it's an enormously big star. It isn't enormously heavy in proportion to its size. It's mostly very, very thin gas. We don't know precisely what the mass or weight of Betelgeuse is, but it's somewhere between 10 and 20 times the mass of the sun. But it's reached a late stage in its life where the core of the star collapses down and becomes very, very hot, and the outer layers expand away from the core. So it's mostly very thin gas. Think of a marble in a balloon sort of thing. You've got a very dense core and a very, very thin surrounding gas. And the gas circulates, has convection currents that carry the heat from the core to the surface. So the surface temperature is about 3,500 degrees Celsius, which makes it red hot. The sun, for comparison, is about 5,500 degrees Celsius. So it's a red giant star. It's literally red or really orange to the eye. And it is a giant, something like 700 times wider than the sun.
I understand that its light and radial velocity curves have been markedly different from its past. What does that mean exactly?
We can measure the speed of the surface coming towards us or going away from us. That's what's called the radial velocity, the velocity along the radius. And using a spectrograph, we can see changes in the way the light of the star. If the surface is coming towards us, then the light is made slightly bluer. What we're looking at are lines in the spectrum of the star. The spectrum is basically the star's light spread out into a rainbow, and that rainbow is crossed by dark lines made by various chemical elements in the star. And we can measure those, the positions of those lines in the laboratory. So if the surface is coming towards us, those lines get shifted slightly towards the blue. If it's going away, they get shifted towards the red. And so we can measure the radial velocity by watching how those lines change position. And the other side is the measurement of the star brightness. It has been followed quite carefully for a long time to measure the pulsations, both the change in radial velocity as the surface comes towards us and goes away as the star pulsates, and you also get brightness changes that usually correlate one way or another with those changes in the radial velocity in the pulsations.
Didn't Indigenous Australian peoples discover Betelgeuse's dimming and brightening habits long before Western astronomers?
Yeah, we don't know exactly when, but they have a long tradition of knowing that Betelgeuse is a variable star. It's not the only one. They also were aware that other red stars like Aldebaran, which is one eye of Taurus the Bull, which is not all that far from Betelgeuse, but has disappeared into the evening twilight now. It'll come up in the morning sky along with Matariki around the second half of June, basically. Aldebaran is also a distinctly orange star, quite a bit fainter than Betelgeuse, but they knew it varied in brightness. Also, Antares in the Scorpion. Now, Antares is in the evening sky. It's an orange, a bright orange star, not as bright as Betelgeuse, but a bright orange star, high up in the eastern sky now in the evening. And Antares is also a red giant star. And the Australian Aborigines knew that all of these red stars varied in brightness. I'm not sure of the exact history of Arabic and European astronomers, but the first really noticed variable star was also a red giant, and there was a chap around about the beginning of the 17th century cataloguing stars, and he found a star in the constellation of Cetus the Whale, which was a second magnitude star, quite prominent, and when he checked a few months later, it had gone, and that was the first what we call now, he called the star Myra, meaning a sort of marvelous star, and it pulsates over about a year, and it changes its brightness by a factor of about 100, which is an enormous change. So sometimes it's quite a prominent star, well, obvious to the eye anyway, not prominent, but and then sometimes if you don't have a telescope, it disappears altogether. And we call those stars Myra variables. Now, Betelgeuse is variable, but nothing like that sort of range. It ranges over a couple of magnitudes with a factor of times, or about five times or so, in brightness. So that's obvious to the eye if you watch the stars very carefully.
Could Betelgeuse explode in our lifetime?
We don't know for sure. I think the best estimates are that it will, the core of the star will run out of energy and collapse down sometime in the next 100,000 years. I'm not quite clear on how that interval was derived, but we know that it's a giant star very near running out of energy, and when it does, the core collapses and you get what's called a core collapse supernova. So it will then explode and become exceedingly bright for a short time, much brighter than now.
And of course, when we're looking at Betelgeuse, we're observing galactic history, aren't we?
Yeah, you're looking back. It's curious, actually, that the exact distance of Betelgeuse is still not established. It's about 550 light years away, which means light is taking about 550 years to travel to us. The closest star, apart from the Sun, is Alpha Centauri, the brighter pointer. That's about 4 light years away. So we are looking back over about 550 years, but that's a very small part of a star's normal lifetime.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Been a pleasure.